Welcome to the Vet Show, episode number 13, brought to you by HBI Auto, all part of the Coach Rob Podcast Network. We got a really good one, Coach, today. We have a special guest here, James Jetmar. He's one of your riders on the Complete Racing Solutions side, one of our vet guys. Awesome dude. We'll get to know James a little bit more. He's been on before, but we'll reintroduce him because it's been a while. So,
absolutely.
James, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Dan. Good to see you again. Good to see you, Coach.
Good to see you.
Coach, Dan, welcome.
Dan, I always like to say, James is the man, the myth, and the legend. Like, when you look that up in the dictionary, that would be Mr. Jetmar sitting right there.
Well, he is like the Complete Racing Solutions factory pilot, poster boy for you. Like, I see James everywhere. He's a machine.
Well, and I know James doesn't like to talk about himself, but James, you mind sharing with everybody how you like to make a living?
Oh, well, yeah, actually I am a pilot by living by trade. So, yeah. So not only am I a factory pilot on the team, but I'm a pilot in real life.
That's pretty cool.
It's very, very cool. I mean, when you look
at is like the jack of all trades, good God, Coach. I don't know if there's anybody I've ever met that's so like diverse.
Well, and that's why I wanted to have him back on the show. We got a great response the last time he was on, but you know, I know James is not someone who likes to talk about himself, and he's probably going to take away my Christmas card for saying this today. But you know, that's what I love about having James. He's our vet moto guy. He does some off-road as well. We have Steve Bynum on the off-road side of things. And what I want people who follow us here on the Vet Show to realize is what we specialize is trying to get the most out of the time you have available to travel, or excuse me, to train. When James is traveling, sometimes we have 30 minutes. Sometimes he has 4 days when he's got all the time in the world. And that's what I want people to understand, whether you're in our membership area. You know, when you jump into membership, you could use the express side. And it's not a sales pitch on it. It's just, I want people to understand that we respect that. Yeah, it'd be nice to get paid to race dirt bikes. And we all know, and we'd love to watch the sport where people get to pretty much wake up, ride, cross train, eat, sleep, and repeat. And even though that would be a dream for everybody who's listening to this show, we realize we've got to work with the time that we've got. And I've got some questions for James today when we talk about our subject, and I'll let you kind of tee that up, what that's going to be today.
Yeah. Before we tee it up, I'll just let the listeners know, we're going to be talking about the tools and the resources for health and performance. But, before we do anything, Coach, number 13, episode 13.
Absolutely. We're going to let our guests go first.
I want to hear who James has in mind for number 13, because I think you guys are going to be shocked on mine.
Okay. Who do you have, James? Number 13. When you think of that number, who's the first person that comes to your brain?
Well, it's funny because I listened to your last show, but they are delayed a few weeks, and it was number 11. So I was planning for number 12. So when I heard it was 13, it kind of took me by shock for a second. But the first guy came in my mind was Sebastian Tortelli on the Honda.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
One of the best Frenchmen we've ever seen, you know, when you think about it, that's a good one.
Yeah, and yeah, I remember he said he wasn't afraid to run it. I think he said that. I believe it was him. But yeah, I remember that.
And that makes sense. I mean, most people are petrified to run that number 13, you know, but it's a good one.
Who's yours, Coach?
You know, when you and I were talking about this last week, last month when we were talking about it, first person I thought of was Mike Craig. You know, I think of that being on that Honda. I don't know, I think that was Honda of Troy, if I'm not mistaken, but I just remember him, that big white plate, you know, big white number plate on that Honda. And whenever I think of that number, and right behind that would be Heath Voss, you know, when he was, I forgot how it was partitioned off. He had Supercross, which was not combined with motocross. And then he was like the world champion because he did like the one in Canada or something like that. There was like this third title that he got to run when he was factory Yamaha there for a while. So that would be my two off the top of the list. You've got kind of a shit-eating grin on your face. I'm kind of apprehensive to know who yours is.
You know, I mean, I was going to take a stab at you two old guys here because I'm the youngest of the three. And in my generation, we really haven't had many 13s because it's like that superstition. So I didn't really have one. So I was going to make fun of you two old guys for having one because we're not that far back. But then... I mean, my childhood hero, Ricky Johnson. He was 13 at one point, I think, in his career. So yep. That would be mine. That's I was young, coach. I was like maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years old, somewhere in there, when he was running 13. But
there you go.
I don't I awesome. Think of who is like the, I know like Heath Voss, he's kind of my generation, and Tortelli too. That's why I can't really give you guys too much crap. But who was the last guy to run 13? I was trying to remember this, and I can't remember the actual last guy to run it.
I would, oh, that's a good one. I don't know.
It might be Voss.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's gotta be Voss. I would think it was, cause I think after that, most everybody was like, I'll just pass on that number. And I, to your point, exactly, Dan, I don't think anybody's really leveraged it since Heath.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd have to go with James on that one. And I have to confess, I kind of teased about it when we did number 12 last month. You know, when I was racing BMX, when I was young, my mom was a chain smoker. And when I got into BMX, she said, if in the BMX world, you have state plates. And then if you start racing the nationals, you get a national plate. When you do state, it's top 10. When you do national, it's top 20. So started racing BMX, and my mom said, you get a state plate and I'll stop smoking. So I got 10 the first year I went expert, and she didn't stop smoking. And my mom's a good person. I don't want to paint her out, but I want to share with you how this 13 comes all into play here. And so then I moved up a class and got a chance to start traveling nationally. And my mom said, if you get a state top 10 plate and you get a national plate, I stop. Now, I got state number one that year, and I got national number 15. And she said, well, if you get top 10, I'll stop smoking at a national level. So the next year I got national number 8. I got state number 2 that year because we were racing more nationals. She didn't stop smoking. So then I get through my amateur career and I go pro. And my mom says, if you make the main event at the Worlds, I'll stop smoking. And I did. Unfortunately, I flipped over the gate in the main and got last place. But she never was able to stop smoking. And the reason why 13 is so important is, my second year of being on the national circuit, I raced two classes. I raced 20 inch bike. And at the time we called them cruisers, which are 24 inch bikes. And I got national number 13 on the BM on the cruiser class. And my mom was actually born on Friday the 13th. And so it was kind of like, it was an interesting twist where I never could get her to stop smoking. Unfortunately, I ended up dying of emphysema from smoking for so many years, ironically, but I have that number 13 plate up on my wall here in my office. And just kind of ties it all in. You know, I was never been afraid of Friday the 13th, the number 13, because my mom was born on it. So just fun little tidbit, yeah, but
love it.
Never got her to quit smoking. A tough addiction for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Let's get into it. Tools and resources for health and performance. James, this is, you're going to be able to share kind of what we have some notes here and some bullet points to we'll cover, but since the last time you've been here, I think the last time you were just doing, you know, pretty much heavy motocross racing. I understand that you've been doing some off-road stuff. What have you been doing since we've last talked to you?
Yeah. Still moto, a lot more local stuff. Just been having a lot of fun with the local districts. I think it's kind of really important, honestly, to support the district, the local racing, and it's become quite a real welcoming family of all kinds of, you know, people that have been around for a long time, and then meeting all kinds of new people that are coming into the sport. So that's been actually quite fun. And then it's actually led me to doing some off-road stuff like sprint enduro racing, which I truly love. If any guys, especially vet riders, that do not want to necessarily sit at a motocross track all day long, come do a sprint enduro event. It's very gentlemanly hours. They start at like 11 o'clock. You're done by 2. You get about an hour's worth of riding in between. You could race Saturday and Sunday against the clock. No first turn crashes, nobody really, you're just racing against the time. So you're racing against yourself, which is really fun because it's kind of, you know, what we really do this for anyway, is just to better ourselves, not necessarily to get better than it's nice to beat certain people that you want to beat, but you know, at the end of the day, it's just trying to get yourself better, and racing against the clock is no better way of doing it, in my opinion. And then doing some woods racing, some hare scrambles, which I absolutely hate, but that's the reason why I do them, is just because I'm trying to get a little bit better at them. So yeah, that's it.
I'll have to pick your brain a little bit more on this sprint enduro thing, because when you said no first turn crashes, I'm all in. One that I'm deathly afraid of in my old age, which I'm not that old, but the first turn scares the and it always has my whole life, you know, it's just scared me to death. So I gotta hear more about that. But
definitely. And
James, you do some more other stuff too. You do hiking, running, like you're a very athletic guy.
We opted not to ride moto on Saturday because I actually got a pulled groin that I'm trying to nurse back. But so we did a good 2 hour mountain bike ride, me and a buddy of mine, on Saturday. Then Sunday, my wife and I, we did a bunch of hiking, and then my daughter, she's into doing the Spartan races, so I jump into one of those with her, and she got into some gravel bike racing. So we did a couple of gravel bike races last year, which I would like to do a couple more of this year. Those are quite fun. So, and yeah, it's a couple of mountain bike races here and there, and 5Ks. You know, I got to do the Thanksgiving 5K all the time, and that's pretty fun. So yeah.
Awesome.
Just trying. It's fun. It's just fun trying to, I don't know, just trying to better yourself. I just get a kick out of it. It's fun.
Coach, you said a thing before the show started when we were kind of behind the stage talking, and we kind of joked that James is like the poster child and like the do all, you know, but what you said was our sport is so intriguing and interesting because, you know, James can go ride his dirt bike on Saturday and then Sunday he goes to run a 5K. Or he goes, you know, to do another sport of some sort. Runners typically can't, you know, come off the track or the marathon and jump on a dirt bike and go ride it, right? So that's what makes our sport so unique and cool, that it really expresses the athleticism that our people have.
You're exactly right. And no disrespect to anybody who may be a hardcore gravel bike, mountain bike, triathlete, runner, marathoner, 10K. Surfer, wakeboarder, snowboarder, whatever. What I just find so interesting is other people find their one sport like the most demanding of all time. And yet James is out there using those sports as cross training to go fast on two wheels with a motor. And I've always been intrigued by that. You know, I'm a big fan of Rick Johnson. I would love to meet him. I'd love to have him on our podcast. He's always been, I've respected him because he always spoke his mind. He was never politically correct. He put his money where his mouth was. He wasn't afraid to stir the stink pot. Wardy, you know, Bailey, all those guys that think about it, when they weren't racing moto, what were they doing? This is back in the early 80s. They're doing triathlons. Every weekend they weren't racing, they're doing sprint triathlons. And so you look at that, right? Swim, bike, run. You look at the crossover of having muscular strength, muscular endurance. They have another energy system called lactate tolerance. Think about it as sprint speed. Because of the way that we work with our athletes, and I want everybody that's listening to the show, we consider you one of ours, right? We're trying to put this show together to get you to understand the right way to train. It isn't by doing exclusively sprint work like CrossFit. It's not about just grinding out long, you know, 3 hour bike rides. It's not realistic with the amount of time you have, and it doesn't build the energy system matrix the way you need it. But how cool is it that James, let's say a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, can do three different disciplines. And then during the week, he's on his gravel bike. He's running with his daughter, swimming. We could throw out just about any sport and James does it. And again, I don't mean to embarrass him while he's here live with us on the show, but it does exemplify what makes our sport so cool, because our athletes can go do any other sport, but not many other sports can do what we enjoy. And that says a lot about how tough our athletes are, but also how diversified. I say to James all the time, it's cool to be fit, because the world's your oyster out there. You just go enjoy whatever you want to do. So cool stuff.
Very cool. Well, let's get into it. Let's talk about some tools and resources that James and our other vet riders use to assist in their health and performance. And the first one on my list, Coach, is you know, we talk a lot about the Garmin, right? The Garmin fitness watch. But more specifically, The Garmin heart rate monitor is such an important tool because it does so many different things. And from, when you're, if you want to wear it when you're sleeping, or if you're on the dirt bike, or whatever activity you're doing. But if you could, if you and James can kind of go through how he uses that heart rate monitor to improve himself.
What I'd like to say, and I'm going to ask James to kind of run with it here. A lot of people only think about getting physically fitter is the work that you put out. You know, how many pounds of weight are you moving? How much are you lifting? How much time are you spending doing cardio, concept two row, or swimming, biking, running, whatever it would be? You got to remember, it's not the volume of training you're doing, it's how much training you could absorb. Without sounding like a textbook cliche, the definition of overtraining is just simply not absorbing the volume of training that you're doing. Don't even worry about the intensity. I mean, it's important, but just keep it as simplistic as possible. I have athletes that, think about a professional triathlete, it'll do 34 to 45 hours a week. Some people say that's a lot of training. Well, then you get a professional cyclist that cycles 50 hours a week. Does that mean that the cyclist is better shape? No. It's just they don't run, so they have a little bit less impact. But what I'd like James to elaborate on is we use the Garmin for both, we call it the work side as well as the recovery side. And James, just to kind of put things in context, I know with your travel schedule, there's not a, set in stone, but when you look back over this last 3 to 4 months, how many hours a week are you putting on? Let's talk about the work side for a moment. How many hours a week are you putting on, both including the motorcycle and cross training?
Well, if I am home, when I'm home a week and then I work a week. When I'm home, I'm still putting in the same amount of off motorcycle training as I am when I'm on the road, which is approximately a little over 7 hours. And then when I'm home, add in about, if without racing, 3 hours of riding as well on top of that. And then if it's racing, you add in Saturday and Sunday, about an hour, a little over an hour each day as well.
And not to put you on the spot, and our listeners know that Dan and I don't script our conversation. So if you don't know the number right off the top of your head, that's perfectly fine. When you look at, we just put those two together when you're at home, right? 3 hours on the bike, roughly 7 hours cross training wise. What is your typical calorie burn rate on a daily basis?
Well, daily basis, it's right around 30, what is it, about 3,300 while I'm training. And I guess when I'm not training, it's 25-ish hundred, right around there. And then like my biggest days are, I think it was just recently, I think I sent you a picture. It was maybe 5,200. Was it 5,200 calories? I forget. Or was it
Yeah.
like 4,500? It was a lot. It was a big day.
Yeah, it was over 5,000. And that's the crazy part. Like when you look at 3,300 calories, and Dan, we've talked about this all the time, right? We use an extra large egg as a sense of reference. An extra large egg yields 75 calories of energy. So when James has that 3,300 calorie day, that's the equivalent of 44 extra large eggs. So, and this is where I want the listeners to kind of reverse engineer what we're talking about. If you know what your calorie burn rate is, which the Garmin tracks that for you, both resting and active, and let's say that you're going to duplicate tomorrow what you did yesterday, right? You're going to take Monday's exercise and you're going to repeat it verbatim. Everything that you did for 24 hours on Monday, you're going to do the exact same thing on Wednesday, just for illustration purposes. Well, on Tuesday, you know that you're going to consume 44 extra large eggs just to break even on what you burn versus calorie density of what you consume. Now, I don't know about you guys, but if I have a four egg omelet at 8, 9 in the morning, I'm not really hungry till dinner. Well, an extra large eggs, if I do a four egg omelet, you're looking at 300 calories and I'm full. See how difficult it is to try to bridge 3,300, much less, like James said, 53, 54, 5,500 calorie day. You feel like all you're at a feeding trough all afternoon. And that's what makes this Garmin such an incredible resource because, James, I would be very curious, and I want to make sure that we don't lose the listener here. When we're talking about recovering, how many hours of sleep when you're at home, or I don't know, is it easier for you to get consistent sleep when you're at home or better when you're on the road?
Well, I honestly hate to admit this because I used to tell my wife all the time that if I ever got comfortable switching beds and switch and you know staying in these different hotels, and it was time for me to quit. But I finally have gotten comfortable, so I actually sleep better. If I'm consecutively in the same bed after about 3 days, I start to not sleep as well. So when I'm on the road, I'm getting, and this is quality sleep as far as my numbers go. It's at least eight, but I'm striving between 8 and 9.5.
And when you're looking, and just so everybody understands, when James makes the comment about quality, this is again is another attribute to Garmin. And by no means are we trying to, pitch Garmins. I purchase all my Garmins. James purchases all of his. Dan purchases all of his. And if you look in the description box below this, if you're on YouTube, you do have access to our Amazon store. We've been approached by Amazon for years. And instead of us making $10 on a watch, we just ask them to give you the best. I just want to make sure you guys have the right resources. When we're looking at the sleep, one of the variables that you're able to get out of Garmin is it gives you your quality. And what we refer to that is how much time are you spending in deep sleep? And James, do you know, like, even if you just looked at or were to share your numbers from last night coming into today, how much deep sleep did you get last night?
Well, I'm proud to say that I am as close now these past 2 years to 2 hours of deep sleep a night. I'm mostly between about 1 hour 47 to 1 hour 50 something a night
Okay.
for deep sleep. And that's,
Dan, where are you at on your deep sleep, big boy?
oh, I don't even, it's so bad, coach. I don't even look at it. I honestly don't know. It's, I have, man, with everything, I mean, it's no excuse. Everybody has so much going on in their lives, but it's tough, man, with a business and the full-time job and the podcast and trying to ride and everything else. My mind just doesn't shut off. That's one of my problems that I have, is my mind just doesn't turn off. So it's hard for me to get, good deep sleep.
Well, and I think that's why it's relevant to this podcast today because, James and I have had tremendous conversations about how hard it is. Like he literally has to put himself to sleep and he's still got a ton of projects to do, like especially when he's on the road. And it's that idea of like, all right, excuse me, I know I've got to start my day tomorrow at 7 a.m. So to get those 9 hours, that you've got to be asleep by 10 o'clock. And it's an uphill battle. And Dan, I appreciate your honesty with it, because I think our listeners can resonate with both. There's people that have been listening to us for a while and they've made it a priority to get those 8+ hours. And then there's people that still struggle. You still have a little one at home. James and I are fortunate. Ours are out of the house and off to school and the whole nine yards. But it's interesting. Our listeners fall somewhere in the middle of both of those. You know what I mean? And when we look at sleep, I want to make sure that people understand the reason why James was saying he was proud of that deep sleep number. Is the more deep sleep you get, the more HGH and testosterone your body gets a chance to release. And those are the recovery hormones. So it's so incredibly important. And Dan, when you talk about not being able to shut your brain off, is that just because you're solving the world's problems? Or like, what can you pinpoint as to why you can't shut it off?
Yeah, just just thinking about so many different things at one time. A lot of it is like, I've got a lot on my plate, so
Yeah.
it's thinking about, man, how many, I got 20 orders to get out in, tomorrow morning by the time I start my day job, and
Sure.
or it's sales tax, God, sales tax is due. It's just it's always something, and so I stay up worrying about that kind of stuff. The other thing, and I'll admit it, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are very bad at too, is being on my phone before I go to sleep.
Okay.
It's kind of when I tend to check Instagram or whatnot, and depending on what I see on there, coach, I can get wrapped up in the political game at times, and sometimes that just sends me to the moon, and then I just can't sleep, So it's to my own fault, of course, but yeah, it's the phone is an issue. The nights that I don't get on my phone, I'm able to usually to get to sleep pretty quick. And then if I don't have a lot on my plate for whatever reason, I usually sleep pretty good, but it's
Well,
pretty rare.
let's keep this conversation going because for some of the listeners, they may not be aware of this, but you've just mentioned a couple of times there, Dan, stress, right? You get stressed out on payroll taxes and state tax and sales tax and all the beautiful California things that Newsom loves to do for you guys. But the idea here is not to get your blood boiled. No, all joking aside, what is your average stress score? And like for the last week or seven, you know, 4 weeks, what have you seen? What's your average?
I would have to look. I don't even know.
Okay. James, just out of curious, what's yours been sitting at?
Right now I'm at, for today, 19, which is normally a little lower. That's pretty good, 19. Normally I'm right around mid-20s.
I've never seen 19, ever.
And just so the listeners, if when you get a Garmin, one of the attributes it gives you is stress score. And the reason why we want to bring it up in the context here, like with James, like I think about having the responsibility, all joking aside, of flying a plane, right? The cost of the plane, the lives that are on the plane, it's pretty daunting in my opinion. James, how many years have you been a professional pilot now?
Actually 30, 29 years, 29. Okay. Years. Yeah.
You know, so for you, it's like getting into a car, just doing your thing. But the reason why, again, I want to make sure the listeners understand why we're walking through these different attributes. Today's conversation is about the tools that are important for health and performance. If your stress level is above a 25, it's very hard for your body to decompress. One of the, if you guys think about, and I think most of the listeners can empathize with fight or flight, Dan, that sympathetic versus the parasympathetic. When your body is under this constant struggle of dealing with stress, no matter where the stress comes from, and we don't want to make it any worse by being dehydrated, being undernourished, not getting enough sleep, that's before you have to deal with the rogue boss, your rogue employee, you know, crazy traffic, all the other garbage that we have to deal with. If that stress level is constantly redlining, your body's producing a hormone called cortisol. And I want everybody to please pay attention to the idea that it's almost impossible for your body to rejuvenate and create new lean muscle. A lot of people don't realize that. You can be in the gym lifting weights, but if the weightlifting is perceived as excessive stress by the body, the cortisol that gets released is actually inhibiting muscle from being recovered and even getting thicker and bigger. So I hear this quite often. How can I go to the gym for 6 months and I'm actually getting smaller? That tells you clearly that the strength training is crossing that threshold. So this is another one, Dan, that's just super, super important.
Yeah. The one thing I wanted to touch on real quick, we touched on kind of sleep. And the, bless you. We touched on the sleep and the, the stress and whatnot from the Garmin platform. I wanted to touch a little bit on the heart rate monitor and how we utilize that heart rate monitor. Now, and one of the things I wanted to pick your brain about too as well is the accuracy of the actual watch on your wrist versus the chest strap. And obviously, you know, we wear the chest strap when we ride or we're doing something athletic. I don't think a lot of us use that when we're sleeping. But kind of maybe talk about the difference. And then if James, you can kind of talk about how you utilize that heart rate monitor to maximize your performance.
Now, James, sure. You have the HRM Pro chest strap, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. And I just want to make sure that the listeners know that HRM, you can get it wet. It's designed for triathletes. So you can swim with it. You can dive with it. You can do all kinds of fun things. For us who love the two-wheeled world, the HRM Pro is awesome because it's darn near bulletproof. And James, do you know off the top of your head, how much memory does that have in it? Is it 90 minutes in the chest strap?
I actually don't ever use it because it's always just, I have as far as the memory.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just so everybody knows what James is referencing, with these new Garmins, they actually are reading off the back of your wrist. They've got these little electrodes that they put in there. Dan, to your point and your question earlier, in regards to which one's more accurate, the chest strap is more accurate, but it's pretty minuscule now. It's down to like less than 1%. Mm. I've heard some people say it's as high as 3, but what we always say is because if there is a margin of error and you use the same measuring device, that margin of error kind of equalizes everything out. It's kind of like stepping on a scale and the scale's inaccurate. All you really care about is the delta of change. Does it really matter if you're 193 or 192? You know, it's really irrelevant. It's about how much does it change Monday through Sunday. That's what you really care the most about. And then going to your question before we pass it over to James, you know, the idea here is when you're training with that heart rate monitor, the heart rate monitor has two distinct advantages. Number one, if James comes to me and says, hey, Rob, during these sprint enduros, I can get my heart rate elevated, but I can't sustain it. That's called being able to handle a high lactate tolerance. That's why it's called a tolerance. You can actually adjust it. Lactate threshold, the threshold means it could be adjusted. So if James says, hey, look, endurance wise, I can finish 90 minutes, no problem. There's these very short explosive elements, but when I go to those higher heart rate levels, I have a tendency to kind of go backwards. So what we would do is we do a max heart rate test with James. We plug that number in. And then what we know is, and this is where I want the listeners to pay attention, hopefully it'll be an aha moment, Dan, is if you do it, we in the description box, we have a heart rate spreadsheet, which I would encourage everybody to use. For James to be able to improve that anaerobic threshold, you have to get above his personalized calculated number. Everybody's heart rate zones are completely specific to themselves, and there's a tremendous amount of variables. Now, the cool part is Garmin, it's factoring in height and weight and body composition and bone density and all. That's what's cool. Garmin takes all the heavy lifting out for you. But if you implement a max heart rate assessment, now what we know for James is for him to improve his lactate tolerance, to improve his anaerobic threshold, he knows he's got to get his heart rate above a certain number. And it's specific to the motorcycle. It's a different number for the rower. It's a different number for the gravel bike. It's a different number for him when he runs. It's all based on how much muscle mass you're using. This is another area that I want to make sure our listeners are not getting frustrated with. You cannot pull your max heart rate from the motorcycle and apply it to all forms of cross training. It's a different range. But when we want to make sure that James is maximizing his productivity, his speed work needs to be above a certain number. But the crazy part is on his active recovery easy days, we put a governor on him. We say, James, please don't let your heart rate get above a certain number. We say this to James all the time. And this applies to all of our listeners as well. Most people go too hard on their easy days, and therefore they can't push hard enough on their quality days. And Dan, this is something that we've spoken about, but not at this deep of a level. And this is the resource that we use to make sure that James is always maximizing his productivity. And most people think about maximizing productivity as punching the red line. Productivity is, if it's supposed to be an easy day, keep the heart rate low enough. Big difference.
That's such a misconception. We talk about it all the time, right? Just going out and smashing yourself just because you're in the gym and you're smashing yourself every day does not mean you're helping yourself.
You're exactly right.
Destroying yourself.
It becomes counterproductive. And that's the part that's so difficult. Like, and again, I don't mean to embarrass James, but you know, James is literally, if you guys watch Top Gun, the movie, the old one with Tom Cruise and the gentleman that just recently passed away, that's James, right? The top 1% of the top 1%. Anybody who's listening to this show, everybody loves to win. We may not be on par with Chase Sexton and Cooper Webb and Jet and those guys, but we all want to be the best, whether it's in our marriages, our relationships, our business relations, finances, health. Well, all of a sudden now you're hearing me say, hey, James, you're going too hard. And he's like, I'm what? Don't tell me I'm going too hard. I'm not going hard enough. That's just what we do. We throw out those big peacock feathers and we're like, don't tell me I can't. Because then what it insinuates is, what, you don't think I'm tough enough? No, it's the exact opposite. I know everybody listening to this is a bad mofo, but when you're going to exercise, I want to make sure it's at the right intensity, at the right duration to address your frustrations. But like we said at the beginning, if you've only got 31 minutes a day to train, we have to work with 31 minutes. We can't bitch about what we don't have. We have to work with what we do have. Oh. And James is really good. He'll text me, hey man, I'm going to be in the air for the next 18 hours. What should I do when I land? You know, it depends. What does he have access to? Can he do a cold plunge? Not like sit there and freeze. I'm talking about go just float in a pool for 10 minutes and then go get in a jacuzzi, do some contrast therapy, that kind of stuff, especially when you get to time zones.
I got a question for Maverick here. I'm going to start calling him Maverick.
All right.
When you're in the plane, like there's no exercise or anything you could do. Is there anything that you could do while you're in the airplane flying that would benefit you? And maybe this is like sitting in an office chair, right? Is
Oh,
there
yeah.
anything that you do that benefits you, like health-wise?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's a great question. Well, first off, I try to get up and stretch if I could stretch. That's important. Walk to the lav, do a nice, we have an open galley to where I could get a few stretches in. But if I'm actually confined to the seat, I always have a little small lacrosse ball with me, and I'm able to get in little trigger areas where I have a little put of a pull on my muscle on my back or in my legs or my butt, and I'm just kind of working it out, which is also loosening me up at the same time. And I'm also icing as well. Every hour or so, I'll get a little bag of ice and I'll put it somewhere and I'll put it on for a couple of minutes and then take it off, and then I'll do that alternate every 5 minutes. Between those and staying hydrated, that's pretty much what gets me through.
So see, you could sit and do nothing. Well, not sit and do nothing, but you could sit and do something that nobody an excuse, coach, right? The other day I was sitting at a friend's house, and we've done this before with the tennis balls and the lacrosse balls and stuff. But have you ever run a golf ball on the bottom of your feet?
Oh yeah, it's painful.
Amazing. Oh yeah, I mean it hurt, but felt good too.
Yeah, the only thing that I want to warn the listeners in this is again the male ego in all of us. We have a tendency to think little's good, more is better. And what we always say is start with a tennis ball, because when you put that on your foot, or like James was saying, put it in your glute, you can put it right at the base of where your sit bone is at. You get the high end of hamstring attachment. It's a frequent area for high hamstring tears. James can put that right in the belly of his hamstring and then work that up to the sit bone. But to your point, Dan, we always recommend people start with a tennis ball and then they move to a lacrosse ball. It's a little bit harder, but it's a bigger surface area before you move to a golf ball. Because we've literally seen people, if you guys can imagine, this is your foot, these are your toes. We've seen people take the tennis, the golf ball, put it right there at the base of that toe and actually break that joint because they're putting so much pressure on it. And it's so low, you got it. And I don't want to insult anyone's intelligence, so please forgive me if it sounds like I'm being condescending. The smaller the surface area gets, the more narrowed in and the easier. That's why we start with a tennis ball, right? You've got a bigger surface area and it's soft. So you could stand on it, you're not going to break anything. You go to a lacrosse ball, stand up, you could still break stuff, but the surface area is so big, it takes progressively more. You get to that little laser point of a golf ball. Surface area does not give. It's very small. Now, if you don't get over aggressive with it, the beautiful part about it is you can get into those little nooks and crannies because it is so small that you can't get with a tennis ball or a lacrosse ball. And like with James, when he travels, we would prefer to have a tennis ball, find what hurts. If it's not a 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, then we'll go to a lacrosse ball, big, nice area you can get in between his shoulder blades. You want that lacrosse ball, depending on how firm your seat is. Because if you're dealing with a really plush seat and you put that lacrosse ball and you sit on it, it's just going to go in the seat. You don't really get to do your tissue. I don't know, James, if he's able to do, are you allowed to, or I don't know, are you able to do, work on your feet while you're flying?
It's kind of hard to get your shoes to. You wouldn't want to lose the ball or anything because you
That
got
makes sense.
rolls over there. So yeah.
That makes sense. And Dan, you bring up something too that all the listeners can benefit from is compression socks. Because even if you're sitting here listening to this, if you're listening to this podcast, literally sitting down, look at your ankle, 90 degree turn. Look at your knee, 90 degree turn. Look at your femur, look at your thigh muscle to your torso, 90 degree turn. So for the heart to offset, especially when James is in the air, you're offsetting gravity. Even though the cabin is pressurized, you're still 30,000 feet in the air. His heart has to offset the ankle 90 degrees, knee 90 degrees, torso 90 degrees. So his ability to get what we call venous blood flow return, if you study this lymphatic, like if you guys have ever gotten sick and you put your finger behind your ear where you've got a lymph node and it's all swollen, that lymphatic fluid is all part of health. So when you're flying, even if you're not flying, what we say with our athletes, if you're traveling more than 2 hours, even an hour, I would go that far. Slide those compression socks on. I know they're not the most attractive, right? But if you have to put them on and then, you know, if you're going to get out and go to the restaurant or something, just slide jeans over it so you don't look like one of these triathletes running around. You know what I mean? But, you know, the idea here is they do work. There is a legitimate science behind them, and it brings, that's why you see somebody in a nursing home, if they're bedridden or they're in a wheelchair, that's why they put those sleeves on them, is because when your foot pushes off the ground, your calf is a pump to get the lymphatic fluid out of the lower extremities. So when you're flying or you're sitting situated, or you're situated in a place where you have 90 degree torso to femur, knee, and then your foot, that's why you get to your destination and you have Fred Flintstone toes, because all the fluid is trapped down there in the lower. That's why we hate when you break your ankle and they put you in a cast from the knee down. You notice how the calf muscle not only shrinks, but you notice how your foot looks like it could be popped. It's all the lymphatic fluid stuck in your extremities. Sucks.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Well, now that coach told me in a very nice way, James, that I'm an idiot for using a golf ball, let's move on to the next. next one on my list is we talk about scales all the time, especially when we're talking about being hydrated, weighing yourself in the morning, weighing yourself at night for hydration or swelling. More specifically is the Garmin scale. I don't think we've talked much about the Garmin scale, coach. So I don't know if you and James want to cover that and how that benefits.
100%. And I apologize, because you never got a chance, James, to elaborate how you use the heart rate monitor there. So I apologize. You mind sharing how you use the scale every day?
Sure. You know, one real quick thing about that heart rate monitor that I think is super important is when we talk about performance, we seem to really get excited about the big numbers because those are exciting. But for me, it's all about the lowest number. And that's the number when I wake up to see what my resting heart rate is, because if I can't nail that number, then there's no reason why I could even worry about the high number. So that's one thing I just have learned throughout our 5 years, Rob, is that that's the number that's most important. It's a boring number, but it really, you know, dictates what my week and what my day is going to be like. As far as the scale goes though, same thing as looking at my watch in the morning and looking at the Garmin app to see where I'm all at. I step on it at night. I see what my number is. And I know what my number should be most of the time. And, then in the morning time, it's about 5 pounds lighter, and it all downloads. Sorry, my phone is going to low power. It all downloads straight to my watch, and then it goes down to the Garmin app. So it's I don't even have to plug in the numbers. So it's pretty nice.
And Dan, what's really impressive is when you hear the number, and everybody who's listening, nobody is immune to what Dan just mentioned. When you go to bed at night, you're going to, you know, if you've ever camped out, you wake up in the morning and the inside of that tent soaking wet. If you touch it, you know, the water drips in. People underestimate how much fluid you lose at night when you're breathing. Body goes through its recovery process. Obviously, you empty your bladder once, maybe twice during the evening. I love the way that James mentioned, because the magic number is, I want all the listeners, weigh yourself first thing in the morning. That morning number is what shows us inflammation and swelling. So if you had a really big race yesterday, we expect the muscles to be broken down. Inflammation makes sense. If you have a nice, easy day yesterday and your body wakes up in the morning, that inflammation is coming from a sensitivity associated with food. Very easy checks and balance. So the consistency of weighing yourself in the morning is to help you find inflammation and swelling from either exercise or from sensitivities to food. You heard James say that he wakes up every morning and he's 5 pounds lighter. This is why we feel it's imperative that every day you should go to bed 5 pounds heavier, at the very least 3, but preferably 5, because we know you're going to lose that every night. Now, Dan, here's where it becomes volatile. Anybody who's listening to this, and we just recorded last month, finding your race weight, right? We talked about the idea of getting lighter, therefore you're going to be faster. This is where we can run into a catch 22, because a lot of times people get excited and they go, well, I want to get to a certain body weight. Let's just pull a weight of 185. You weigh 200 and you feel like you're fighting weight at 185. Well, if you get to 185, how do you know it's muscle? Excuse me. How do you know that it's not the eating and the cannibalization of muscle? How do you know that that's not dehydration? And this is the way that we do simple checks and balances. If you wake up at 185 in the morning and you go to bed at 190 and you wake up the next day and you're back down to 185, we know that that loss is water weight, because there's no way you're going to lose 5 pounds of fat in one night, right? Now, you could exercise for 12 hours in a day, and you know, you're not going to just all of a sudden see that you've burnt. If you took skin calipers, you're not just going to see a 4 millimeter decrease because you know, did the Boston Marathon, or you went and did Ironman and it took you 14 hours. So the idea here is pay attention to your morning number is inflammation and swelling. Your evening number is making sure that you're properly hydrated. And if you're up 3 to 5 pounds, you know that at the end of the week, if you've seen a slight decrease, you know that that's the cannibalization of body fat, not chronic dehydration. That is such a big one, because people get kind of bent on this, on what the number is on the scale screen, and that's not what matters.
Yep, I agree. James, any more to add to that before we move on to the next thing?
Nope, that's exactly the way we do it.
Okay, so we should just have Coach Rob mute his microphone now, because this is where he always gets weird when I start talking about energy fuel and recovery fuel, because he says, not in this to sell stuff and yada, yada, yada. But here I am. I'm like the poster. I love energy fuel. I love recovery fuel. Every time I talk about it, James, Coach starts getting, look, he looks, see how ready he is right now? Energy fuel and recovery fuel, I think, are essential for anybody that's doing sports. In fact, I give it to my 9-year-old daughter at times, you know, because it is so beneficial. But James, I'm sure you go through a lot of both product. And how do both of those products benefit you as far as keeping you energized, your hydration levels, et cetera?
Well, that's funny that you say that about you give it to your daughter, because there's another gentleman on a team. I was at a race last weekend, and he gives it to his fiance. Well, doesn't give it. She likes to drink it as well. And he's like, it makes us just feel so great. And I'm like, yeah, it's a good drink, it regardless. But I love the recovery fuel. I believe for me, it's all about recovery. And when I get that recovery fuel in me, I honestly just get the confidence knowing that my muscles are going to get everything that they need to grow, and I'm going to be able to recover so I could repeat and do the same exact thing that I need to do tomorrow to hopefully get a little bit better. So I love that, you know, recovery fuel. Chocolate, that's all I ever order, is the chocolate.
Well, and I love that too, because, you know, as we get older, right, we don't recover as fast or as well. And so any good product that can assist us in recovering is beneficial to me. And one of the things that, and I say this every time I talk about recovery fuel and energy fuel, is I've tried a lot of this different things on the market. This product tastes the best to me. In fact, Coach, you sent me watermelon. The watermelon is, love the watermelon flavor for energy fuel, but it tastes good. It tastes clean. It doesn't have like that nasty, gritty, you know, texture to it. It's just, it's awesome. And I use it. I use a lot of energy fuel. I use a decent amount of recovery fuel. It's for me, James, I have a problem with dehydration. I tend to dehydrate myself. I just don't drink enough throughout the day. And man, that stuff has saved my life so many times. So huge proponent of that. Coach, I'll let you talk about it now.
No, I appreciate it, guys. And again, I don't ever want the listeners to think that it's a sales pitch, but the context is so important. I have never created a product unless there was a need for it. I mean, last thing I wanted to do was have another, this sounds so arrogant and I apologize, but last thing I needed was another company to manage. And I was out there looking and I'm like, damn, you know, I've got athletes that are doing these 6-minute sprints, amateur motocross. And then I've got guys doing 3-hour GNCCs. And how can the same product expect to work for both? And so I got with some food scientists, and you know, it's kind of like taken from that Disney movie Robots, right? Robin Williams, bless his heart, you know, see a need, fill a need, as he says in Robots. And that was the whole genesis behind it. I was like, there's not a product out there that matches intensity. And I want the listeners to pay really close attention to this idea. If you're doing a 6-lap, you know, sprint race, 6 to 10 minutes, your intensity is much higher than if you're out there doing a 3-hour GNCC. So just think about the inverse relationship between the volume and your intensity. Well, if you're going to be going balls to the wall hard, I need to have that sugar molecule a little bit easier to break down than something that you're going to do for 3 hours. Now, in the energy fuel, like the boost in the regular energy fuel, we know that your heart rate's going to be relatively high. So we put a lactic acid buffer in it. I'm trying to do the science for you. It's not just about having flavorful drinks. We have 8 flavors because we know as endurance athletes, we get burnt out when, you know, back in the day when sports drinks first came out, there was what, orange, lemon, lime. I think that was pretty much the only two that Gatorade had out in a powder form at that time. So we all get burnt out on it. You train with it for 6 months, you go to a ratio like, oh gosh, that flavors, I'm burnt out on it. We wanted to have a rainbow of flavors available, but I also wanted to make sure that the molecule of the carbohydrate matched your intensity. And I have a responsibility to serve you as a physiologist to all the listeners. You're bringing the heart rate up. It's like you rolling your throttle, right? You're not surprised more byproducts coming out of the exhaust because you're rolling the throttle on. So that's why we put a lactic acid buffer in there. So it allows you to go fast and it buffers the byproduct. And we add an abundance of electrolytes because that's what you lose through sweat. And electrolytes are necessary for water absorption. That's why you urinate more when you drink it. And we know that you're burning it up. Now put this together, guys. Heart rate's up. You're burning more water, burning sugar quickly, and you're losing electrolytes. What is the energy fuel designed to do? Keep that saturation point up. It is not a sales pitch on energy fuel. There's a science behind each one of those designs. There's the energy fuel boost is for 1 hour or less. Energy fuels for 1 to 3, and energy fuel plus is for the 3 hours and above. Match the molecule in the electrolyte profile to the intensity and the duration that you're going to be using it for. So that's, you know, I appreciate everybody giving it a shot. We've not had any negative feedback on it, and I'm proud of that, but a lot of science.
Very good stuff. Let's move on. James, nutrition, travel. And that is probably the hardest thing for somebody to stay on some type of good nutrition program is when you're traveling. So if you don't mind sharing with the listeners, you know, how important the nutrition program that you have, you know, that you're on, and how do you consume enough calories a day traveling, which has got to be tough.
Well, I will say, very fortunate that most of the hotels that the company puts us up at, they offer us free breakfast. But the hotels have been getting a little annoyed with me, and because I've been ordering so many eggs in the morning time. So now I have to pay a little bit of a fee because I'm the guy who's ordering the four eggs every day. And they're like, oh yeah, you're the guy. You owe us $5 for all those eggs. So, it's just eating on the road is eating. Listen, it's impossible for me to pack everything in my suitcase. So I just got to eat as fresh as I possibly can. And it's not all that hard. I mean, there are times when there's no choice and you're going to have to grab something that you don't necessarily like, and you immediately know you don't like it because you don't feel good afterwards. But normally it's as you know, it's not that hard for me to find, if I got to, you know, a Subway, you know, which I don't necessarily love, but I'll do a Subway sandwich. I'm staying out of the McDonald's. I'm staying out of all the fast food restaurants. That's pretty much it. It's not, just like Rob says, it's not really all that hard. It's once you learn to stay away from the fast food and the soda and all those sugary items, it becomes easier because you realize you feel like garbage if you don't eat if you continue eating that stuff.
Let me ask you this. If you're traveling and the only place to eat, say, is an Applebee's, mm-hmm. what is James Jetmar ordering from Applebee's?
Oh, I'll get a steak with some broccoli. If they got a sweet potato, I'll get something like that. Nice salad. Definitely. But it's kind of funny. I was listening to your show when you were talking about what you're eating when you come back from a race or something. And I wish I was on, because it's always a Five Guys for me. If I could find a Five Guys after I just burned 5,000 calories, I'm getting that double cheeseburger, the fries, and the vanilla milkshake, which is pure. It's whole milk. It's, I don't know how many calories it is, but it's definitely satisfying, and it's getting me to where I need to be. Now, I'm not eating that every day, though. That's just, every once in a while.
Well, that's cool, Coach, because you always say we don't live in a glass house. And that's why I asked James that question. It's, we think that, oh my God, I'm not home to cook. So, we're going to eat. You could find a healthy option at a lot of restaurants. It just really is. It comes down to choice, right? It comes down to looking at the menu and does the cheeseburgers, does that sound better than a steak sometime? That not to me, but maybe to some, right? But it's just finding that healthy choice. And then, like James said, the Five Guys, I mean, it's sometimes you have to reward yourself. And as bad as some of that food is sometimes, it just tastes good, especially the milkshake, James.
Yeah. But reverse what James said, though, and I think it's something that I want the listeners to really hang on. He mentioned that he burnt over 5,500 calories. So therefore, it's almost like he knows that he's got a big calorie gap to bridge. And we're not saying that the Five Guys is the healthiest of choices, but it's amazing when you, and this is, it's going to get a little bit gross for the listeners, and I apologize, but if James has that double cheeseburger and he has that vanilla shake and he has the fries and he doesn't get any gastrointestinal issues, pretty much shows that his body didn't reject it. If he's not falling asleep at the steering wheel, it shows that his body was able to take it in. And it's interesting when you start getting around that 5,500 calories, your body gets it becomes less and less picky. It's like, feed me now. And in that case, that's where like the Five Guys, the burgers, the fries and the shake, it hits the spot. But remember, and this is another element of Garmin that is very specific. It builds a calorie profile on you and it knows what your calorie needs are to stay alive. They refer to it as resting. And then it starts to calculate how many calories do you burn when you ride for 20 minutes. Now, obviously, average heart rate is going to dictate that calorie burn rate, but it builds a profile on you. And you get these nice, you can look at the report on a 1 day, a 7 day, or a 4 week window. This is what allows us to start what we do with James is, and all of our athletes, is what we call a projection. You know that you're going to go ride 3 20-minute motos on Saturday. Well, you can look at the last time you rode and you can see what your calorie burn rate is. And then we start putting a strategy together to try to bridge that for the time that you're at the track. Go back to the restaurants. Like you said, though, Dan, it's simple. Whenever there's a salad that's available, order it. And then just ask, there's not a single restaurant. If it's a sit-down restaurant, you can certainly order a piece of chicken and a salad. And it may not be a Caesar salad. It might not be a spinach based salad, but just get the salad and throw some protein on it. And then just ask for every vegetable that they have. Like James said, he likes to do steamed vegetables. It's amazing. You can pretty much make any sit down restaurant work because they have enough of the staple items. It's not difficult. It's just about pre-planning. That's the hard part. If you're going to go a lot of hours, you're going to have to snack. Sorry, bud.
In the salad, right? You can't add half a bottle of dressing. That's the kick.
Well, that's the crazy part. If you use balsamic vinegar and extra virgin olive oil and you mix those two together, right? The EVO, the extra virgin olive oil, it's the type of oil that your body uses for energy, or it passes it as waste. The balsamic vinegar gives it just a little bit of flavor. So it's a win-win-win-win-win. And the hard part is like if James has got a 9 or a 10-hour straight flight, that's when you have to start looking at packing some mixed nuts and some raw coconut and dicing it up. Or we have a product, I don't know if you call it a product. It's what we call GORP. You take and go to someplace where you can buy bulk nuts, get some cashews, some almonds, anything but a peanut. A peanut is actually in the legume family, which is very starchy. So any nut, try to go, some of them are a little bit bitter, like a walnut. Cashews are always a favorite because there's so much sugar in them. A raw almond, any nuts that you can get in season. And then people are going to laugh at me, but get a bag of peanut M&Ms, get a full pound size and put all of that in a big mixing bowl, right? So you get a pound of cashews, a pound of almonds, a pound of walnuts, and then you put a pound of peanut M&Ms in there. Then you get those little snack size baggies and you literally just fill it up to the rim and seal it. So when you reach into your backpack, James is flying. He's got 8-9 hour flight ahead of him. When he grabs that baggie, you're not asking how much do I eat? You eat until that snack size baggie's consumed. What'd you get? High quality protein, high quality oil, and that little bit of salt and sugar, a little bit of sugar that comes from the peanut M&Ms it quenches that salt sugar thing. Now, some people are going to say, oh, you shouldn't eat M&Ms. Choose your battles. Yeah. If James is burning 45 to 5,500 calories a day, I'm not worried about 400 calories coming from peanuts over the course of, you know, 8 hours. The hard part is not getting bored. You know, you can only eat so many bags of nuts and then you just want to throw them at somebody. That's just reality.
Last thing on my list is kind of wraps everything up, right? This is kind of like the proof in the pudding, and that's getting your blood work done and ensuring that the things that you're doing during the week, month, year, whatever time frame you have is working, right? Or it's you're making sure that you're not diseased with Epstein-Barr or some of these other viruses or diseases that are out there. So I know, James, I'm sure that you have your blood drawn, you know, staying on top of things. Coach, I'll let you kind of take it from here because I'm not sure what kind of program James is on as far as that, but it's essential to make sure that you're in line.
Absolutely. James, what type of cadence are you on right now? I think you're on 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, it's 4 months.
Okay. And again, if we were to try to draw like the perfect, you know, scenario, sure, get it done once a quarter, but everybody's got families traveling, you know, everybody's got their business obligations. And for the sake of the listeners, if you have the ability to kind of draw something down, it will kind of paint a very simple picture. Start with a cell and then draw an arrow to the right. So it goes cell to tissue, then draw another arrow to the right. So it goes cells, tissue, organ, then draw another arrow to the right, and then write the word system. So think about that as a flow chart, right? You start with a cell. Cells make up tissue. Tissues make up organs. Organs make up a series of systems. What frustrates me with the medical system is we wait until the system is diseased. So if you're looking at your piece of paper, right? If you'd gotten your blood work done and you saw that you're out of balance of something, well, you have a couple of choices. Number one, you could eat more foods that are high in those. Let me be very specific. Let's say you get your blood work back and you're low in B6, you're low in B12, you're low in iron, and you're low in zinc. Well, your first step would be to eat more foods that are high in those micronutrients. Do that for 3 months, get your blood work done. See if there's any kind of a delta of change. If you're still out of range, then what you need to do is look at supplementation. Do that for 3 months, get your blood work done. If you're still out of range, then we have to start cutting back on training. Because if I say to James, he gets his blood work done, let's use a calendar. If he gets his blood work done in January and he's low in B6, B12, iron, and zinc, you think he wants to hear me say, hey, bud, let's just go ahead and pull back on training? He's like, Rob, I've got Daytona. I've got this. I've got that, right? So what we want to do is encourage them to eat more foods to try to get those numbers up, but we're still at a cellular level. Then we do the blood work. If he's starting to get in range, good job, James, you're nailing it. We're getting into that sweet spot where you're eating enough that you're able to absorb it. But let's be negative. We get to the end of March and he gets his blood work done. Sure enough, man, he's still low. Well, he does supplements for 3 months. He does his blood work. Sure enough, he's still low. Well, now we have to start asking ourselves, is it a digestive? Is his gut? Does he have something going on in his belly? Something in his large intestine? Bacteria is out of balance? Do we have some mold going on? Because if you're not absorbing what you're eating, see where people can kind of badger themselves? I'm out of range. I'm eating more, but I'm still out of range. The last thing that an athlete wants to hear is, hey, how about we cut back on your training and your riding and your racing? Well, that's what you live for. So that's why it's important, because what frustrates me is when somebody doesn't get their blood work done, and then it's not until they start having some really bad fatigue related issues, then they go get their blood work done and then they're out of rank. Excuse me. Now they're quote unquote diseased. Congratulations, Mr. Jetmar, you have Epstein-Barr. That was 100% avoidable. And Dan, that's why I've said it on the show previously. We live in, I don't think it's specific to just the United States, but our healthcare system is designed not to kind of hedge anything off, but just try to fix it after it's broke. And that's what makes this conversation so difficult, because I know that we've had listeners, Dan, that have DM'd me and said, hey, Rob, I'm exhausted. And I go to the doctor and the doctor tells me, you're fine. Everything looks, and here's the infamous, everything looks good. Well, you got to think about it. You ride your motorcycle. Think about the average heart rate. Pretty high, because you're pushing and pulling a dirt bike. We have families. We have job responsibilities. We may not always get to sleep the way we want to. We may not be able to get as much food. And that's where it starts to become a problem. because we're still busy being dads and you know, partners and all the other responsibilities that we have. So the challenge is your wife, she still has things that she needs for you to help around the house. You still have your job and all your obligations. And then over here, you have training, and then you're still trying to ride and race. So the depletion is just constant. So if you don't get the, remember we talked a little bit earlier, knowing what your calorie burn rate is designed to keep you from having this huge deficit. And what we're trying to do is make sure that you don't put yourself into the, and dig yourself into such a deep hole that they go, Mr. Jetmar, you're the proud owner of a fatigue related disease. And I'm over here pulling my hair out going, which was 100% avoidable. So that's where I hope it ties in with everybody. How, and you know, you've got James at professional, you know, flies full time at, and it's legit. It's not an easy career to have, plus two children, plus a beautiful wife, plus trying to ride, obviously go racing and then racing moto, and then doing things that are a little bit longer, right? Getting into those 90-minute off-road races, two-hour GNCCs. It adds up on the burn rate pretty quick.
Definitely. Well, this one was awesome. James, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to jump on the podcast with Coach and I. Greatly appreciated. Any part?
Heck yeah.
Absolutely.
Dan, I want to let you know, I've asked for James's permission as well as Steve Bynum. We're actually going to be doing, with our channel here and our podcast, we're actually going to be doing a case study. We're going to be, James and Steven have agreed, for the sake of our listeners to kind of get a better idea. We're going to be sharing some testing numbers. We're going to be sharing, some things relevant to getting ready for races. We're going to be sharing a lot of information. Both guys have agreed to do it. So we'll be incorporating that. If we can get James to come back with a schedule, if not, we can at least be giving updates every month on how much the numbers have changed and specifically how they're changing. And we want to make sure that our listeners are able to kind of lean in on that information, incorporate as much as they can. And we'd love to see all of our listeners, whatever it is. You might just want to be able to ride with your buddies on the weekend and enjoy it. You might want to try to qualify for a national. You might want to win World Vets, Mammoth. Maybe one of Zeb Armstrong's multiple races he's got out there, Dan. He's got a lot of really high profile fun stuff for vet riders. So I'd love to see our listeners enjoy that.
That'd be awesome. Looking forward to it. Again, James, thank you so much, Coach. Thank you. Thank you for HBI Auto for presenting this podcast. Thank you to all of our listeners, all of our subscribers on YouTube. Make sure you guys like and subscribe. Make sure you guys share us. And as always, make sure you guys leave us comments in the comment section below. We love those. It's where we get a lot of content. We're able to answer questions that you guys have. So again, thank you so much. And we'll see you on episode 14.
Peace.